Yeah, the good old days.
Good old days.
Morning. Today's Daf Mabed Metzia is Samach Tes. We are back on Samach Zayin. We're basically starting at the two dots there with the words Peshitta. Okay. Discussing a lot in the last couple days regarding Mashkon and pledging properties. And in the event that a lender lends money and with a specific property intent as a pledge, where the lender then is going to be assuming, let's not use the word ownership, but basically, you know, a certain degree of bias, a certain degree of, I guess, ownership. But I don't want, it's not ownership. He's not the owner. But in other words, but he assumes some sort of standing with this property, as the property is there not only as security for the loan, but it's. Excuse me. It's been identified as the land that's going to be serving as payment. So we already discussed at length the Gemara's discussion of Asmachta. What if the land is greater than the value of the loan? So we talked about whether or not this would violate the rules of Asmachta. And then what we discussed at length yesterday was the question of whether or not the lender is considered an owner of the property, a short-term owner of the property, or is he considered just simply a lender, but he really has no ownership of that property whatsoever. And really what this is going to depend on is two various minhagim that exist in the time of the Gemara. One minhag, again, it was just minhag amakim. It was just a question of what community you lived in and what was the custom. Certain communities had the custom where the borrower could prepay the loan, and at any point in time he prepays the loan. So then he says to the lender, "Okay, here I am. I'm ready to pay up my loan, and you'll get off my property right now, and you will not. And my parents also you won't have because I satisfied my loan." On the other hand, the minhagim in other communities was there was no room for prepayment, and it was an understanding. It was an implicit understanding in certain communities that the term of the loan went the term of the loan, and only at the end of the loan, only at the conclusion of the loan, then and only then the borrower can pay back the loan. And the Gemara points out, we discussed this the last number of days, that if it's the minhag is prepayment, so then for sure the lender is viewed as a lender the entire duration of the loan, because at any point in time the borrower could just simply go over to him and say, "Hey, here I am, and I'm ready to pay you up." However, if the minhag is not to accept prepayment, so then you know that if the loan is, let's say, a 10-year loan, so then you know you're going to be sitting on the land for 10 years, and so then for those 10 years he can be viewed to a certain degree as the ownership of the land, certainly the ownership of the produce. Okay. Obviously, all this became a part of the fifth parak of Bamitzia because there is obviously ribis consideration, meaning that in the course of those 10 years in which you are now not owning the property but you are holding the property as security for the loan, so you have a mortgage on the property. So over the course of that time, there's going to be produce coming off that property. Produce coming off that property now is going to be interest on the interest on the loan. That's aser, could be aser min haTorah, could be aser min derabanan, but it's certainly aser regardless. And so what are you going to do in terms of avoiding that iser? So that's what the Gemara has been discussing already at length. Exactly what to be done. We talked a couple suggestions about nachyasa, some sort of nominal deduction annually to allow the lender to quote unquote buy the produce, or at least buy the rights to get the produce. We talked about kitsusa, where basically there would be on your off years in terms of when the lender would be able to take the produce versus a full reimbursement. Okay. Basically, the Gemara dealt with various ways of structuring the deal to avoid the ribis prohibition. All that stated, let's continue where we left off yesterday. We are behind the daf. Pshita, the Gemara says, I'll start off with an obvious point. Okay, so it's nice. So today we get to start off easy. That's great. Ba'asra de Misalke v'amar la Mistakana. So let's say the community, the minhag of the makom is Misalke, meaning that there is an option of prepayment. The borrower can prepay the loan in order to excuse the lender. V'amar la Mistakana. And there was a, even though there was a prevalent minhag in the community, but the lender says to the borrower, "No, nothing doing. I'll lend you the money, but I'm telling you right now, I'm overriding the general terms of loans in our community. I'm not accepting prepayment. So the Gemara says, "Hakamar d'lamas takana." So the Gemara says, "Fine." In other words, if the lender wants to lend under those terms, even though that's not the accepted minug, but again, as long as there's a contracted understanding between lender and borrower, so you could rewrite the terms of what is the prevalent minug in the community. So the Gemara says, "And that's easy." And the Gemara says, "Good." And now we can move on to the one that's slightly more challenging. Ela ba'asur d'lamas takhe. But let's say the community we live in, there's no the general minug is not to accept prepayment. Fine. And the Gemara says, Va'amar mistakana. And the lender says to the borrower, you know what I'll do? I'll accept prepayment from you. In other words, if you want to pay off your loan earlier than the term of the loan, that's fine. I accept that. So the Gemara says, my. So the Gemara says, can he do that or not? Can he not do that? That's not really the question of the Gemara. In other words, for sure, the lender can do that. Again, the lender wants to stipulate and overwrite what the general practice of the community is. He can absolutely do that. Question of the Gemara is, it explains the Gemara, Tzarech l'mikne minei olam. So the Gemara says, does he need a kinyan? Meaning that basically what he's saying to the borrower is, I will accept from you early payment. I'll take the money from you earlier. So over here, as opposed to in the previous case, which was pashut, which was obvious, he's basically saying, I'm not accepting money from you. So in other words, when we get to the term of the loan, then and only then can you talk to me. And that's the next time I want to meet you. But in other words, I don't want to accept money from you earlier. So basically there you're saying to him, I don't want to see you, hear from you, or realistically, I don't want to take your money until the term of the loan. That's fine. That's easy. Here, however, where the prevalent minhag is not to accept prepayment, and the lender says to the borrower, you know what, we'll construct a loan in which I'll accept prepayment. So now that he's accepting money, does he have to ratify this by making a kinyan? Meaning a kinyan sudur, ratifying the idea that he's ready to accept the money earlier. So on this, the Gemara presents a debate. The Gemara quotes opinions amongst the Amoraim, and then the Gemara says that a kinyan must be done in order to ratify this agreement. So,
but don't they need a kinyan in order to receive the money?
No. In other words, when you're borrowing money, you just simply get the money. The kinyan over here is just the understanding that I will accept the money back from you earlier than normal. Our community is not to accept the money early. I'll accept it earlier. Okay. Amar. Okay. Borrower says to the lender the following. Ezov aise zuze. So, lo achal. Ezov eitrech v'aise zuze. So the borrower says to the lender the following. We're obviously talking about a community where there's an accepted minhag to prepay. And the borrower says to the lender, look, I'm now endeavoring to get you the money. Stop eating the produce on my field. So again, the land was pledged to the lender. And again, however we discussed yesterday, various forms of constructing the loan so that the lender is not in violation of ribis. Okay? But basically now, the borrower wants to assume... reassume his rightful ownership of the property. And the way he could do that is by paying back the loan. But over here, the chiddush is as follows. He simply goes to the lender and says, I'm getting the money. Right? Ezov aisezuze, lo achel. Don't stop, you know, don't eat anymore. Ezov itchuk aisezuze. So Ravina Amar, achel Amar, zuchabred, Mari Amar, lo achel. So, by him firmly stating that he's ready now to get the money, does that prevent now the lender, who is now the occupier of the rightful occupier of that land? Must he stop eating the produce? So once again, the Gemara quotes a debate on this issue. And the Gemara says in that the halacha, the accepted halacha is that with a commitment made by the bar that he's going to pay, at that point in time, the lender must stop eating. It is fair to wonder, the Gemara doesn't delve into this much more, it is fair to wonder, at what point do we now know that the borrower is just making up a story? Meaning, if the borrower says, I'm going to pay you the loan, and then a week goes by, 2 weeks go by, a month goes by, right, the loan isn't paid, so when can the lender say, you know, I think you're full of hot air?
Also, there's an issue of spoilage if the food is going to spoil.
Right, right, correct. There's that to consider as well. So again, exactly. So the Gemara doesn't delve much into this, but the simple point the Gemara is communicating to us is that we will favor the borrower in the sense that once he shows not just the money, but a commitment to get the money, so that already now is going to move the property from the lender to the borrower. The Gemara tells the way that certain Amoraim conducted themselves, and a trio of Amoraim, Rav Kahana, Rav Papa, and Rav Ashi, so they, even though they lent money, and even though they received property as pledges against the money, they would not eat the produce of the property, and even with Nachyasa, even with a deduction, in other words, a nominal fee that was deduced, that was deducted from the loan annually, sure. So they still wouldn't do so, and parenthetically, this is consistent with what we learned yesterday, that even though it is a legitimate way to structure a loan in order to remove the ribbis prohibition, but the Gemara said yesterday, Surba Mirabanan, that Talmid Chachamim should not conduct themselves the way they should conduct themselves above reproach, even though it's legitimate. And Ravina Acha ben Achias. Now Ravina would go ahead and he would eat the produce of the land using this deduction method. Now it is more than fair to wonder that goes against what I just said. I was quoting yesterday's Gemara. I just said that when you're Talmid Chacham, so you should conduct yourselves in a way that is, in this particular regard, above the letter of the law. So Tosus on the very bottom asks a very simple question. Tema. So Tosfos just simply quotes the Gemara that we did together, which is that if you're a Talmid Chacham, so then you should not practice this method of deduction. And so then how can Ravina allow himself to eat the produce of the land where he lent the money, the field was pledged to him, and he's eating the produce using the method of deduction, and the Gemara says that shouldn't be the behavior of a Talmid Chacham. Tosfos quotes, just give me a second, Tosfos quotes the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, Va'omer Rabbeinu Tam, D'Ravina lo havarot salitel Hashem, V'lasos atzmot sur ben merabanan. So Rabbeinu Tam has a fascinating idea, and that is that you can be a Talmid Chacham without having the status of a Talmid Chacham. Meaning that, and mind you, by the way, we've already seen various versions of this, that there are, once you conduct yourself as a Talmid Chacham, so obviously there's a major responsibility in doing so, and at the same time, we also discussed recently that there are also certain benefits that you receive in doing so. Right? We talked about in the marketplace how your produce gets shown first. In other words, it's a lot of responsibility, and there are some privileges. Tax exemptions, which true to this very day. So what Rabbeinu Tam is suggesting now is that Ravina, basically, he was a Talmid Chacham, but he didn't want the perks and the privileges of being a Talmid Chacham, and didn't necessarily want the extra responsibilities of being a Talmid Chacham, like over here. Fascinating idea by Rabbeinu Tam. Yeah.
In the case that the Talmid Chacham didn't eat, the examples you gave, that's in the case that there is no prepayment. There's a prepayment thing going on. Otherwise, it's only for 3 or 5 years. He's basically giving the loan away because he's supposed to get the food and subtract from the loan.
Right.
So
Correct. In other words, again, that goes back to what we discussed previously, meaning the way that the custom of the community is whether we allow or we don't allow prepayment. Agreed. So the Gemara says now, this idea of allowing yourself to eat the produce of the field with a nominal deduction, meaning, I intimated this yesterday, but the Gemara now is going to try to seek another source, meaning, let's think about this. The lender lent money, and now the property was pledged to him. And by pledging it to him, that means that right now he's occupying the property. And the produce that comes in annually, obviously, is above and beyond that which he's going to get back in terms of his loan. So that would normally entail interest. But the Gemara says is that you'll deduct a nominal fee every year off the loan amount, and that'll satisfy it. And the question, I asked the question already once before, but I told you how Rashi described it. I'll quickly review. How can that nominal deduction take away the problem of ribbis? If the nominal deduction is not commensurate to the amount of produce that you eat, so ultimately you're going to be gaining more than your loan. So I can understand a full deduction based on the produce that you eat, but what is this idea of a nominal deduction? So if you recall, I said this over yesterday, so the way Rashi presented it is that the following. you don't know if there's going to be yield in the course of the year. There may be, there may not be. Really depends on how the land is going to behave. So what you're doing is that you're really buying the rights to it. So, and there's risk involved. So whenever you buy something with risk, so there you factor the risk, and you factor then therefore the amount that you pay. And that's why Rashi said that you can get away with paying a nominal fee because you're factoring the risk involved. That's how Rashi presented it. What the Gemara is going to do now is not so much give a financial and economic argument to why this works, but rather a precedent set in the Torah. I will show you. I mean, the Gemara is going to show us. The Gemara is going to show us that there is a formula in the Torah for you see that you can pay off a land, meaning the yield of the land, at an extraordinarily nominal rate. Let's see this inside. So the Gemara says, let's consider the following: a steachuza. Steachuza is a property that a person inherited from his father, who inherited from his father, going back to the time of the Chalukah, the division of Yoshua. And with the steachuza, so the following halacha emerges: if you are maktish your steachuza, if you sanctify your field, which means not that the field belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, so then you could be goal, you could redeem it. What is the rate of redemption? So the Torah actually gives a formula for the rate of redemption. Now, let's assume that, we don't have to assume, we know. Yovel comes every 50 years, so that means that the maximum number of years that it can be consecrated is 49, meaning subtract the Yovel year. It can be consecrated for a total of 49 years, of which the Torah says that for one kor's worth of land, kor is a volume of 30 sa'a, but basically a parcel of land where you can plant the 30 sa'a of seed. So for such a land, the redemption rate is going to be 50 shkalim. 50 shkalim amounts to a considerable amount of money, but if you prorate it, it comes out to basically a sela, or I say, should say shekel. Shekel and sela, by the way, are the same. I know that's, I mentioned this before. The Torah shekel is the Mishnah sela. So it comes out to 50 slime a year, for the 50 years, sorry, 50 slime for the 49 years, approximately a little bit greater than one sela per year. Now, in such a field, how much yield is there going to be in the field? So again, I'm not a farmer. I have no experience. But I do know this. It's a lot more than one sela. So you see that when you redeem a land from the Beis HaMikdash, so you're going to be giving only one sela per year. And meanwhile, the yield is going to come back to be significantly more. So at least, I mean, it's not an economic argument, but at least there's a precedent in the Torah where you see that the redemption rate is going to be significantly less than the actual yield that's produced by the land. Gemara is going to say all this inside. Tuva, you're eating a lot of fruit, and Amar Rechmana, Kaparik Leiba, sorry, Kaparik La, talking about property, it's a Nekeva, it's a female. So Kaparik La Ba'ar Bezuze, and only, sorry, all you need to do is give four zuzim. Four zuzim, by the way, is equivalent to one stella, which is the way I outlined it a moment ago. So, achinami lo shna. So the Gemara says, so here it's no different. To which the Gemara says, look, it's not, it's an argument, but it's, this is not a compelling argument. Gemara says, okay, but look, let's make a very big basic distinction. You are maktish your field. You're redeeming your field. The Torah gives you a formula for the rate of redemption. Over here, we're talking about a loan. It's different. It's patently different. In fact, once you hear the distinction, it's kind of hard to understand where the starting point for this discussion was. But anyway, okay. Amar Vashi Amrle Sabed Amasa Mechasya Sam Ashkenasa Shasa. So Rav Ashi says that I heard from the elders of Mas Mechasya that a mashkon is a generic mashkon is 1 year. Now the Gemara says Lamay Naf Kamina. Now what does that mean? 1 year? A mashkon could be as long as a loan is. If it's a 5-year loan, it's a 5-year mashkon. What does that mean that the mashkon is 1 year? So the Gemara goes on to explain. So the Gemara says is that for the year, so even in a place where there's an allowance for prepayment, that is only after the first year, meaning that on a loan with a pledge, with a pledged land that's given over to the lender is afforded at least, even a community where they prepay, at least a 1 year reprieve where the borrower cannot take the land away from him, i.e. he can't prepay early. Another statement that was made by Rav Ashi that he heard the name of the elders of Mas Mechasa, and that is the derivation of the word Mashkenasa. Where does it come from? So the Gemara says Shchuna Gabe. Shchuna Gabe means that you dwell in it. You meaning the lender. You lend money to somebody. He gave the land, a pledged land. So Shchun Gabe. You now dwell in it. So the Gemara says Lamay Nafkamina. Now, you're not the owner, as we've discussed time and again. So, practically speaking, what does that mean? When the bar pays back the loan, he's going to take back the land. So the Gemara says, Ledina de Bar Mitzvah. The Gemara says, no. It actually is going to have a practical halacha regarding the neighbor's first option to buy land. Dina de Bar Mitzvah, which we'll be discussing extensively in Baba Basra, is the idea that when you have a neighboring property contiguous to your property, and your neighbor wants to sell the property, he must first give you a first option to buy the land. Obviously, you have to be making a bid, fair market to whatever other bid. Your neighbor does not have to sell to you at a loss, but as long as you make an equivalent bid to the land, so therefore you have the first right to buy it. So the Gemara says, so over here, Lagabe the Halacha of Bar Metra, the lender who is now currently occupying the land, has a status vis-a-vis the Halacha of Bar Metra. Amarava. Okay, and now the Gemara is just going to wrap up our discussion over here with a couple of structured business deals that the Gemara does not like. Now, I know I just ran through that, but the Gemara is going to attack each one of them in of themselves. In terms of various business deals that the Chachamim did not like, as it smacked of ribbis. One, Kitashi Pupanai. So we did not like the Tarsha Pupanai, Kitashi Derav Papa. And that, the Gemara says, is the, if you recall, we did this, I'd say about 4 days ago. Yeah, approximately 4 days ago. The Gemara talked about Tarsha. Tarsha was the following, where if I were to, this is not Tarsha, but I'm reminding us what we learned four days ago. If I tell you the current value of the item, and then I tell you that, you know, with a if you don't want to pay me now, and you want to pay me at a later point in time, so then I'm going to ask you for more. Okay, so basically, I'm getting rewarded for somebody holding on to my money. That's ribbis. Again, we could talk about ribbis derais or derabbanan, but that's ribbis, and that's no good. Tarsha is basically where we play dumb. Where I don't talk about its current market value, but rather I just simply say, you pay me a layaway, you'll pay me 6 months from now, and you'll pay me, I don't say more than what it's worth, we both of us understand that it's a layaway, we play dumb. And the Gemara on Samachay discussed various Samaraim and their tolerance for this playing dumb. Rav Papa was a fan. And he conducted himself in this manner, where he sold his beer. You remember the Gemara? He sold the beer in the springtime. You remember better than I do. He sold the beer in the wintertime. But he collected the money in the springtime. Springtime prices were much higher. And again, so basically he played dumb, meaning he didn't play dumb. Everyone understood what was going on, but they just basically allowed the merchants to wait, hold on to his money, pay the later at some point in time, and pay a higher rate. Now, if you remember, the Gemara went through a somewhat of an elaborate discussion of how he felt that this was justified and why the Chachamim felt that it was not justified. Okay, see the Gemara back on Samachay. The Gemara now is just refreshing and reminding us we don't like it. Meaning, obviously, Rav Papa felt it was okay, but the Gemara says, but It's too close to ribbis. Okay, that's one. Two, shtarim mechuzanai. The zakfil alarevcha akarna. Now this happens to be an excellent introduction for the remainder of today's daf, and basically we're talking about venture capital. Right now I'll say it very succinctly, and later I'll do it better with more details and better elaboration. But basically, what I do is I finance a business, and what I do is I give somebody money, and here we're discussing now something which is unacceptable. And again, by the way, some people did it, but the Gemara is saying it's unacceptable. And that is, I finance the person money. Now, what is basically acceptable is where I assume some of the risk. Meaning, if there is profit, we'll share it. If there's loss, we'll share it. For the most part, that's acceptable. Again, with details coming up later on. However, in in Mechuza, the way the financiers contracted the venture is that they would write down in the contract, here's basically the expected profit from this venture, and you're going to be, I'm giving you the capital, and you'll go and you'll do the business with my capital, and this is the expected profit, and you write down on the contract, and you're going to pay me. Just for argument's sake, let's say the venture itself was, let's say he financed $100 worth of either money or goods, either way, and you write down the contract, I'm expecting back 110, knowing that the profit is going to be more than 110. The profit could be 120, the profit could be 150. But basically, we're contracting that he's going to pay me back 110. Okay, this is unacceptable. Now, it's unacceptable for the obvious reason, because I'm lending him money, and I'm contracting that he's going to pay me more. Now, granted, by the way, and this is why some people justify it, what do you mean? I'm giving him a business opportunity. Meaning, granted, I'm expecting 110 over my 100 that I gave him, but look how much opportunity I'm allowing that person to make. And so, you can make the argument, which again, in Mechuza, some people did, is that he's just buying the option of making money. And it's not really interest. You can make such an argument. And again, the Gemara is pointing out that it's unacceptable. It's not a way to construct the deal. It is too similar to ribbis.
Isn't that because it's guaranteed?
It's guaranteed, exactly correct. It's guaranteed payment. Yes, Daniel.
Similar to Shtar Iska, where you have, it's like a...
Well, Heter Iska we'll never see in the Gemara. The Heter Iska is a more modern convention, if time allows, which it won't. We're just so far behind. I tell you, you can come to me later. I'll share with you the little that I know and understand about Heter Iska. But that's a modern. I don't mean 20th century. Modern meaning 14th, 15th century. But that's like a more modern innovation of trying to. Trying to circumvent some of the ribbis laws. Okay. What was done by Hillel was Shemitah. And the circumvention of Shemitah. That was Hillel. Heter Iska is... Came a lot later. Okay, anyway. So, Shtarim Mechuzna Dezakfer Le'Ravcha Karna V'Kasfer Le'Bishtara. So, it was written down into the contract, and the Gemara points out, we don't like it. Miyem Adav Ravcha. Because it's not guaranteed profit. That's only if the manager does a good job. So then there'll be profit. But if he doesn't do a good job, then there won't be profit. So now, Gemara gives us like a short and very interesting anecdote. Amar Mar Bar Amema L'Ravashi. So Mar, son of Amemar, said to Ravashi, you know, Abba Avid Hachi. You know, I know the Gemara just said we don't like that. But my father does that. My father, when he finances various managers, so he gives them the money or he gives them the product, and basically he contracts just like the way we described it. In other words, he gave them $100 worth of product, and the contract was an expectation that they're going to be paid back 110. He was going to get paid back 110, and my father did it, even though I know you don't like it. Now, but the Gemara points out, the reason why this is now Mar Bar Meimar says that my father does it is because, the truth be told, he says, I'll tell you a little secret about my father. even though he contracted the managers, that the managers have to pay the financer 110, but the truth of the matter is that if the manager came back and the manager said, I didn't make money, in fact, I lost money, so then my father would not expect payment. And even though he had them sign contracts, but he would trust them, and if they said they lost money, so then he would not expect payment. So basically, he was ready to share both profit and loss, and that's why this is not ribbis whatsoever. Now, Amar Lei, so now when Rav Ashi hears this, so Rav Ashi says to the son of a Amemar, his name is Mar, Amar Lei Tena Chechada Isa Li Didei, Yishach V'naf Ashtari Kamiyaz V'mai. So Rav Ashi says, okay, look, your father is a wonderful person, right? Special human being. Meaning if the manager comes and says, oh, look, I'm sorry, I didn't manage the money correctly and I lost money, so then your father would say, okay, fine, I trust you. But let me tell you something. If your father died, and now what does that mean? That there are actual contracts expecting the manager to pay above the above the financed amount. So now, do you think the children are just going to simply believe the managers when they say lost money? The children are going to come and collect based on contract. Mm-hmm. And so Rav Ashi says, meaning I understand what your father's doing. I hear it. I don't like it. I still don't like it. Now, he did say in his argument, it was just a hypothetical argument, he said, and what if your father died? And the Gemara says, and we should just in general be careful about how we say things and how we present things. The Gemara says, Havikishkagash Yotzim of Nea Shalit, Benachna Shenavshe Da Meimar. Okay, we find this often in the Gemara. You know, I understand it is very scary. Obviously, there was no malintent in Rav Ashi. He was just putting together a hypothetical argument, but he said in the argument, you know, what if a Meimar dies, your father dies, and that's what happened. Okay, so obviously, point being powerfully made, you got to be careful about how you say it. And finally, the third business structure that the Gemara says, people do it, but we don't like it, and that is Chakirai Narshai. Now, Chakirai is very similar to the general sharecropping arisus that's described in the Gemara. But in arisus and sharecropping, so when you are a sharecropper, sharecropping on somebody's property, so you, I know this is going to sound very smart, you share crops, meaning you take share in the crop. So again, depending on the minhag, 30%, 40%, 50%, whatever the accepted minhag is of the community. Chakirai, similar, but you don't take a percentage, you take a fixed amount. So you contract with the landowner. I'm going to work on the land for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and you're going to be getting a fixed amount with the understanding and expectation that the yield is going to be much greater than that. Okay, and that in of itself is fine. Meaning you can pay your employees either in shares or in a fixed amount. That part's fine. Here comes the part which is shady. I mean shady meaning controversial. Some are okay with it, some are not okay with it. Now, here's basically what happened. A loan was given from lender to borrower. Borrower pledged the property back to the lender, like we've been discussing for the last couple of days. So far, so good. V'hadar chakra mine. And then what happened was, the lender goes back to the borrower, and the lender says to the borrower, look, right now, for the duration of the loan, the land is mine, meaning I have rights to it. So, during this duration of the loan, what I'd like to do is, I'd like to work the land. Well, I'm not going to do it myself, I'm going to hire somebody. And, oh, by the way, would you be the one who would like to work the land? So now, effectively, what it looks like is that a borrower now is working the land of the lender, and meanwhile, we all know, right, if you've been following the story well, that the land really belongs to the borrower. It's just that the lender right now is the occupier of the land because the land was pledged to the lender. But basically now, what's happening is that in addition to the lender recouping his entire loan, he's also going to be getting the additional produce after the borrower got paid his set amount. So basically now, it looks like interest getting paid in addition to the loan. And the Gemara says, Amos Kane, Dakne, Niale. So the Gemara says, and the problem is that no one understood the dynamics of this deal, meaning that it doesn't. Nobody knew that the lender really was pledged this land, and so therefore, effectively, it's the lender's land, and the borrower is really working on the lender's land. Nobody understood it that way. Everyone thinking that simply that the borrower is just giving extra produce to the lender in addition to the loan. The Gemara says, "Va'ina de kakasri hachi." The Gemara says, nowadays we tend to be more lenient, considering the following: kanina minei v'shahina kama idnei v'hadar chakra. And nowadays the contracts will be written as follows: if the lender, not if, after the lender lends the money to the borrower, then the borrower pledges the land to the lender, and the lender sits on that land for a little bit of time. Making sure that everyone understands now that for the time being, this land is effectively the lender's. Then the lender is going to do the sharecropping arrangement. But at least at that point in time, everyone knows that the land really belongs to the lender, not to the borrower. And the Gemara says, and under those circumstances, it's a little bit better. And the Gemara says, Kadesh lo tinal delos bifnei lovi. Shopper dummy. And the Gemara says, and look, it still looks a lot like ribbis, but we want to incentivize lending. We've seen this time and again throughout the Gemara that the Chachamim did a number of things in order to incentivize people lending money, this being another good example. So the Gemara says, so even though it does smack a little bit like ribbis, but the Chachamim allowed it in order to incentivize lending. But the Gemara then concludes by saying that, tell you the truth. Well, when all said and done, the Gemara says that the argument is not a powerful argument. It really does look a lot like interest. And the Gemara says is that, sounds like from the end of the Gemara, had we had our druthers, we would just never recommend this kind of structured deal. Okay. It brings us now to the Mishnah on the bottom of Samech Esam at Aleph. And we are now talking, sorry. It's getting better, I promise. Okay, we're now talking about Iska. Not to be confused with Heter Iska. Heter Iska, as I mentioned to Hedy a couple minutes ago, is a more modern convention of a Jew lending another Jew a loan, and receiving some form of interest. Okay, again, I'm not going to discuss it now, and in terms of its details and its parameters, it's not. Our objective is to learn the Gemara, learn the Daf, and become familiar with the concepts in the Gemara. We are now going to be discussing about just general Iska. And Iska basically is like what I discussed a little bit earlier, but now we get to discuss in more detail. And that is venture. In other words, I'm going to finance somebody, and I'm going to give him my money or my product, and he's going to manage it, and hopefully he'll make money. And what we'll do is we'll split the profits. So far, so good. Okay. And effectively, what we're going to do is as follows. I could just simply pay him for doing the work for me, but on the other hand, I really do want to incentivize him. So what I'd like to do is, I would like it so that he shares in the profits and he shares in the losses. And it'll be good incentive for him in order to handle my money the best. Right? Nowadays, people who manage their money, so they work on fees, and I totally get it. In other words, they want to know that they're going to get paid regardless of what happens with the money. Okay. But obviously, an excellent way to incentivize the manager is to make sure that he profits if there's profit, and he loses if there's loss. So what do we do? It's pretty straightforward, actually, what we're going to do. What I'll do is that I'll give him venture capital, again, just for the purposes of making this nice and easy. I'll give him $100, and basically I'll say the following. You know what we'll do? We'll divide it down the line 50-50. Of the $100, 50 of it will be yours, and 50 will be mine. Now, the 50 that's yours, of course, is, you know, on loan. Meaning, you're gonna have to pay it back to me. But 50 of it's yours, and 50 of it's going to be mine. Now, the 50 of mine, by the way, that'll be for you a picadon. Meaning, you're a custodian on my 50. And here's what we're going to do. So now that we're going to be taking the money and dividing it 50-50, 50 yours, 50 mine, you go out there now and you manage and you sell and you make a profit. And so now, so let's say of the 100, so now he made 120, nice profit. So now of that 120, so 10 of it's going to belong to him. and 10 of it's going to belong to me. And so what he'll do now is he'll pay me back my loan, meaning the 50 that he was held, that he was a custodian over, that he's going to give back to me. And because that 50 turned around and made 10, that he's going to give back to me as well. And then the 50 that he borrowed, he's going to give that back to me as well. Okay, so I'll come back now with 110 and he got 10. And life is good. And it's a simple deal of financing a venture. So far, so good. And are we in violation of Ribbis? I pause for dramatic effect. Are we in violation of Ribbis? A little bit. Now, when I say a little bit, to be clear, what's the, in other words, the part that he's, the 50% that he's holding on from me, that's a picadon. In other words, and he gave that back to me, plus the $10 that it made. That's fine. And the $50 that I lent to him, he gave me back the $50. And the $10 profit, well, he made that on his money. Because remember, at the time, it was his money. Mm-hmm. So far, so good. There really is almost no problem of Ribbis. Here's the problem. The problem is that I did receive an extra benefit. He managed my money. So, I normally, for somebody who's going to manage my money, there's some sort of management fee that normally comes with it. He managed my money. He did all the work. I just gave him the money. He did all the work. So, under normal circumstances, that is work, that services, that demands something. And if all we do is just take back the money and split the profit the way I just described it, so in of itself, nothing's wrong. But there was a fee. Excuse me. There was a fee that I should have paid him. And if I don't pay him, so that's an extra bump that I got in lieu of him holding on to my money. So there's a little bit of Ribbis going on over here. So all we need to do is just offset that managing fee, and then we're totally fine in this iska deal. Okay. Good. Let's see the mission inside. And so basically all we're going to now that you have all the groundwork laid out. So the mission really is easy now. Cuz the mission basically is just going to describe for us like how much you have to pay as a managing fee. So that there is no additional bonus that I received in addition for him holding on to my money. So the Mishnah says that I should not give the store owner half profit, again, the way I just described it, and I shouldn't give money for a fruit merchant half profit unless I give him schar kapoa. I got to give him some sort of management fee, service fee, that of a worker. We're going to describe that better in just a minute. In terms of how much that's going to be. I should not also make a business venture regarding chickens, where I'm going to give eggs to somebody, and we're going to, once again, half the eggs will be on loan to him, half the eggs will be mine. We'll farm them, raise them, make more, profits will be split. And again, same type of constructed deal regarding animals, calves and horses. Again, you got to give him some sort of management fee so that you didn't receive an extra benefit in addition to him holding onto your money. And parenthetically, when you take an animal for this kind of venture, you raise them until they turn. Now, mishulashim could very well mean until they turn 3 years of age, right? Rashi does not say that. Rashi says when they get to a third of its full growth. That's the amount of time that you're expected to hold and raise an animal. Apparently at that point in time, it's, you know, shechted, whatever. Okay, and as far as the chamor is concerned, the donkey, egel mashulish. Although they're okay, very right. Okay, and a chamor achetei tuenas, and it's in terms of a donkey, the person who was given the responsibility of raising the donkey does so until the donkey is able to handle a load on his own. Okay. We start with the Gemara Tana Kapoa Batel. We are trying to now give some sort of formula to know how much of a management fee are you expected to pay the worker. Now keep this in mind, meaning he is not really your worker, meaning it's a capital venture. You're giving him money to manage. Here, half of it's his, half of it's yours. He's going to manage it, hopefully make a profit, and they're going to split the profits. So to pay him as a worker really is not commensurate to what his role is. What you do want to do, however, is offset the fact that he is working, you're doing nothing, and he normally would be commanding some sort of management fee. So what the Gemara is going to give us is some sort of formula. It's a loose formula, but some sort of formula to tell us how much you get paid. Kapoel batal. My kapoel batal, a worker that's idle. So the Gemara goes on to explain. We're now on the top of Samachet Amud Beis. Kapoel batal shel osa malachal de batal mina. Rashi, the way he describes it is as follows. Im haya nagar nafach kama adam rotz alito livatam imlacha kveida kazu velasos malacha kala. Right, Rashi describes it. Let's say he works hard. He's a carpenter, he's a blacksmith. And you basically ask him, look, how much money would you take to do a much easier job? Now, the much easier job obviously means that you're going to get paid less. So there's obviously going to be a differential between working hard versus working not hard in terms of your salary. But how much is it worth it to you to get that lower salary, but also
take it
easier? And the Gemara says, and that is the formula that we're going to be describing over here in terms of how much you need to pay him for those kinds of services that he did. Now, Tzricha. Gemara points out a couple of examples given in our Mishnah, but they're all making the same basic point. When you're asking someone to manage your money, structuring the deal like we described back in the Mishnah, so you got to give him a fee. Why all these, they're not that many, but there's more than one example in the Mishnah. Why so many examples? So the Gemara says, you're talking about a store owner. He doesn't work that hard. Okay, for all store owners out there, I apologize for the possible slight of the Gemara. But the Gemara says the store owner doesn't work that hard. But if you're given money, expected to buy the produce, sell the produce, so that involves a lot more work. So therefore, you might have thought that the managing fee should be a little bit higher. And on the flip side, by the person who is expected to buy the produce, sell the produce, so for him, he is expected to get again, I don't want to say substantial, but this kind of managing fee. But if the guy is a store owner and all he's doing is sitting in the store, so what he didn't, there's no real physical exertion in his part. I don't know, give him a couple pennies, give him a dime, give him a nickel. And, you know, in other words, he really shouldn't be getting, you know, your standard fee. The Gemara says, give him a date, give him a herring, whatever. So the Gemara says, therefore, it's necessary. Okay, quickly, I'd like to run through these next brisos. There are four brisos in a row, and they're all, it's very simple, it's very straightforward. After having, you know, done all the heavy lifting of today, let's go. Four brises in a row. Tana Rabbanan. Kamus charo ben ruba ben muad divrei Rav Meir. So how much the managing fee do you give for the manager who's managing the funds in the iska that we just described? So according to Rav Meir, give him a lot, give him a little bit. In other words, give him something. Rabbi Yehuda Omer afilo tavli ma'ala b'tzir v'lo achli ma'ala grogros achas zeus charo. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you can give him a date, a fig, a herring. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer nosin los charo mishalem. You give him full payment, meaning what we learned back in the Mishnah. Meaning, Amish subscribes to the Rashbi. Second price. The Tanur Rabbanim Shem Lo Asa Yizim Lo Asa Rechel Lo Kol Davar Sheino Osa VaOchel Amechsa. We do not do an estimate regarding goats and rechelim and anything that eats. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shamin Masizim and Meshachovos Ves Rechelim Mimneshi Gozos Veshotfos Marotos Vesatanagol Mimneshi Ose VaOchelas. The animals which require food, so therefore you have to take that into consideration. Vetanakama Giza Vechelov Lo Sipek Leschar Amalo Mizono. So the Gemara says. Now, as far as the Tanakhama is concerned, yes, the animal eats, but there's also shearing from the animal, and there's milk from the animal, and it doesn't that serve as some form of compensation for his management fee? So the Gemara says, so let's chayim alo, mezona begiz of achalav kule amalo pligi ki pligi, ben esyum ve vetutare. So the Gemara says, if the goat was giving off milk and shearings, so then everyone agrees that that would satisfy the commission, and the, I don't want to say commission, management fee. But the Gemara says, but if all you're getting is nisuve, just the way of the, in other words, not the whole milk, but you're getting just a little bit of the, like the watery milk, or tutare. Not shearings of the animal, but basically the like little loose wool that falls off the animal. So Tanakama several like Reb Shimon Mayochid, Amar Nosal Escharam Mishalem. So the Tanakama says that's insufficient because the Tanakama says that you have to give them the full management fee that we described back in the Mishnah, that we described in the previous Braisa. And Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda, several like Avod, Amar Afilo Tavolimo, Ela Betziv Lo Achalimo, Le Gregor Sachetzev Escharo. And Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda follows like his father, a fig, a herring. That's all you need to do in order to give him his management fee. Tanur Rabbanan, the third Braisa. If you want to rent out your chicken and you want to get a flat rate of return, so the Gemara says that's fine. In other words, that's called renting, and that's fine. However, Isha Sharmal Khaverta Tanagoshali Baitim Shalachi the Aniva Anachlok Beafrochim. However, if you give one woman gives another woman a chicken, and they're going to go into a venture of incubation. So the Gemara says, and they're going to split it. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Matar, Rabbi Shimon Oser. So here we have a debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda lo bayis charam alom ezono ika beitim muzaros. So the Gemara says, now, why is it prohibited? Presumably because you have to pay the management fee. And the Gemara says, now Rabbi Yehuda is comfortable because remember, Rabbi Yehuda consistent to what he said in the first Braisa and the second Braisa is that in terms of the management fee, it could be the smallest amount. Now, not all eggs are going to hatch. Some eggs are going to go bad. And so what you're looking at basically is a fertilized egg that didn't hatch. Now, can you eat such an egg? So the Gemara in Chulin has a discussion of whether or not you can eat such an egg. Who would want to eat such an egg? So Gemara in Chulin says that you have to be somebody who is not dainty. Anyway, so but the point is that since there are some eggs that don't come out, that don't hatch, so that could serve as a management fee. And we're going to do one more brisa, and then we're going to wrap it up. Tana Rabbanan. Makom shenagu la'alos schar katef l'ma'os l'behema, ma'alin ve'in mishanim minhag ha'medina. Okay, when it comes to giving your animals over to a herdsman, so for him, he works really hard. He's got to schlep the animal on his shoulders. So therefore, you have to take that into consideration. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Shaman Egel im imo, v'siach im imo, v'afilo b'amak v'shanagul alo schar katef l'maos. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that if the calf is being given over with the mother, so wherever the mother goes, the calf goes as well, so it's not going to be working that hard. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, l'bay schar amalom, ezarno, ika galalam. Now, what about the management fee? So the Gemara says, well, there you the herdsman, so you get to collect the excrement, and that'll be your management fee. So, okay. All right. And the Gemara says, and as far as the other Tanakhama is concerned, so it's in theory possible for the herdsman to collect the excrement, and it could be used as fertilizer, and it could be used to make other kalim, like the Gemara discussed a number of times. But the Gemara says, but generally speaking, people leave it hefker, and people don't collect it, and that can be used as it cannot be serving as a management fee. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up on the bottom of the Amud. tomorrow we'll have an opportunity to catch up even more.